listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson, and welcome to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. Today, we're going to get into some really disgusting preps. But first, I have some housekeeping items to talk about. In the last several weeks and months, I've gotten to know some other prepper podcasters, and they're all being very friendly to me. They're a very good group of people, every one of them. And it's forced me to listen to a lot of their older podcasts, and that in turn has made me reevaluate some things about Survival in Motion podcast. And I'm not going to say one way is better than the other necessarily, but I will say this, that it's made me reexamine a couple of issues with my own podcast, and I'm going to leave those in place. And let me just tell you, the first is politics and current events. And I think it's entirely appropriate. If there's a prepper reason to talk about politics and current events, I think it's appropriate. I don't think I want to avoid that. And just a couple of examples. Number one, imagine living in the island of Oahu in 1941. As you read throughout the year about the Japanese advancing in the Pacific and in China and Manchuria, the Japanese invasion, which we never hear about pretty much, of Korea and China in those years, was amazingly brutal. And if you lived in Hawaii in the year 1941, you had to have started feeling really nervous. So if you can imagine getting together with a group of friends, say after church or something over lunch, and just saying, hey, what has everybody heard lately? What do you think? Are we in danger of being invaded or bombed by the Japanese? What do you think? And if somebody in that crowd said, oh, I don't want to talk about politics. See, that's kind of what I'm talking about. In 1941, there would have been a valid survivalistic reason to talk about the Japanese invasion of the mainland and expanding throughout the Pacific. There would have been a prepper point to it. This is not a podcast just where I'm going to talk about politics, just for the sake of talking about politics, but wherever there's a survivalistic reason to it, I have no problem bringing it up. You know, another example I can think of just off the top is that baby Alfie in England. England has nationalized health, which is a huge mess, and I think there's some attempts to instill that on the American people. This baby Alfie was terminally ill or had a really awful prognosis. The parents were willing to do whatever they could to save the baby, you know, bring it home, bring the baby to Italy, and some Italian hospitals were willing to give it a try, that kind of thing. But the doctors in charge of that hospital where the baby was just said, no, we're not going to release that baby. We're going to remove all life support from that baby, which made me mad enough to read that. But then they went a step further and they said, we're not going to allow the release of this baby from this hospital unless the family has a big change in their attitude. And I just thought, wait a minute, this is a life or death decision. And you can argue all you want about whether it's a good medical decision or not, but you are, in part, basing your medical decisions on an attitude of the family, which is, it made me mad, but it made me want to throw up at the same time. You know, we're fooling ourselves if we think this won't happen someday in the United States. You know, preppers talk about without rule of law, or sometimes excess rule of law, and that's what that would be. You know, in the opening podcast, the music, you know, with the troops marching, that's what that stands for, is there's a possibility out there all the time of excess rule of law, that kind of thing. So I have no problem bringing politics and current events into it. Another thing I wanted to mention is quote-unquote religion. It's the nature of a prepper podcast where the podcast says, oh, over here, there's a possible disaster on the horizon, and it's threatening you and your family, so you should prepare for it. So let me put it this way. Within the people who are listening to this podcast, maybe 5% of you in the next year will have to evacuate your home because it's on fire, or evacuate your neighborhood or your countryside because it's on fire. Okay. another, say, 3 to 5% of you will have to evacuate your neighborhood because it's in the path of a hurricane, or you'd have to skedaddle because of flooding or whatever. And I don't know about the next 12 months, but at some point, 100% of the listeners of this podcast will die. So with that in mind, I don't think a prepper podcast is complete without some discussion of, hey, you know, you are a mere mortal, and what are you going to do to prepare yourself spiritually? So I'm kind of surprised I don't bring it up more, but there was that one podcast I posted in October, and that was just a sermon I gave at the local nursing home. So I'm probably going to do that again right around Memorial Day. It'll be a sermon I gave last July 4th, and there are a couple of good jokes. And there's a couple of good storylines there, and there's some preaching straight out of the Bible. So I think that I'm not going to avoid quote-unquote religion, because I think it is a valid, legitimate prepper issue, and it should be in a prepper podcast. Another thing, I've actually gotten some feedback, and a couple of people said, oh, I wasn't prepared for the humor. Yeah, neither was I. It just happens that way. I'm discussing something, and if I can make a point with throwing in some humor, I will. Like that last podcast, I think I borrowed a Groucho Marx joke. Okay, on to the disgusting preps. And these are going to be sick, horrible, and make your flesh crawl type of preps. Of course, I'm overselling it here, but I'll start off by saying this. Instead of political stuff or political radio talk shows, and instead of music, I started listening to prepper podcasts. And as the years went on, I noticed that there were a number of suggestions and prepper issues that were brought up that I didn't think were good ideas. And I tried a couple times to email the prepper podcast and just say, hey, that's just not a good idea. Those ideas were not passed along. So as the years went by, I just started putting together a list of ideas I have instead of those commonly accepted ideas among the prepper world out there. And I finally put those ideas in a book called Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. And the sales were okay. And I thought, you know, any given nonfiction book, they say that the reader is only looking for maybe one or two ideas that are new and different. Honestly, I think that book has at least 8 to 10 ideas that you'll read about and you'll go, wow, I never even thought about that. Okay, so that was Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. And then I wrote a fiction book on EMP called EMP, The End of the Grid as We Know It. And the sales of that book were really good. And I kind of wove into it some prepper ideas on just total societal collapse and EMPs and death of the grid, that kind of thing. And the sales were really good on that book, and I immediately started writing a sequel. The first EMP book involved a guy traveling home and his adventures along the way. And that plot line is about as old as Homer's Odyssey. I mean, that's one of the classic literature plots there is. But when I started writing the sequel, I thought, let me do it differently this time. I'm going to have a protagonist in a big city stay there. And it's definitely not what I would recommend. And the further I got into that book, writing it, and I'm still not done with that book, but I got a few chapters into it and the outline was complete and the body count was just, it was astronomical and getting even higher. So I thought I would take a break and write a nonfiction book on how to get a survival retreat. And that's called Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat. And basically, I'm kind of giving the protagonist in that sequel book some advice. Hey, pal, if the grid goes down, if it's a total societal collapse, get the hell out of town. Don't just hang around. So anyway, my wife and I do have a survival retreat way outside of town. And there were a number of things I kind of accidentally did the right way and a couple of things I learned the hard way. So I put those all in this book. So the sales of that book have been okay as well. And by the way, the proceeds of the sales of all of these books the proceeds go to a very worthy cause. My living expenses. But anyway, between these two nonfiction books, all I'm trying to do is just get certain ideas out there. And the sales are okay, and I know that the ideas from these books are taking hold, but at a pretty slow rate. I'm tempted to just kind of read down all the chapters of my two nonfiction books, but that would take days. And although I talk for a living, so I could probably get away with that, but you guys would probably die of boredom. So I'm just going to take a handful of the ideas from these two nonfiction books. And I think the ideas that I'm just going to take just arbitrarily are the most disgusting preps. So let's get started. I keep hearing through the years, store toilet paper, which I think if I hear that again, I'm going to bang my head on this table here. I think that's a really bad idea to store toilet paper. And let me back up. It's not just toilet paper. It's anything that you store a lot of in some place where you're not living. In other words, not your closet. You know, so if you store a lot of stuff in your basement or in your attic or in a shed or in a shipping container somewhere, and you're not walking in and out all the time, guess what? You're going to get invaded by mice and rats, and they will shred that toilet paper. And not only that, but they will crap and pee all over it. And it will cause a pretty bad smell. Admittedly, it's not the worst smell I've ever smelled, but it's a very distinctive smell. So if you store a bunch of toilet paper, say in some shed somewhere, just count on coming back a year later and just seeing a big mess and smelling that horrible smell. So don't store toilet paper. Not only that, but you know, for some reason mice, I guess they get older and Grandpa Mouse will show up and he'll join in the shredding with everybody else and then he'll just die of natural causes. And it's not like the mice will cart the body off and bury it or anything, they just leave it. So the body's gonna decay and start smelling and then the ants will get involved and it's just a huge disaster. It's a huge mess. So don't store up toilet paper. Instead, do this. And let me start off by asking, have you ever been to Europe? I remember the first time I went to Europe, I went to the hotel room bathroom. And this is my inner monologue, you know. I walk into the bathroom and I think, okay, I know what that is. That's a shower. That's a sink there, no problem. I've seen those before. And there's a toilet right there, yeah. And what is that thing right there? It looks like a water fountain that you can't drink from unless you're on your knees. Don't worry. I did not drink water from that thing. But anyway, it slowly occurred to me that, oh yeah, this is one of those things that Europeans use to wash their rear end. So the idea is that you sit down on a toilet and you do your business, and you guys know what I'm talking about without any details. I'll spare you the details. And then you move your fanny over just a couple of feet, and then you, hopefully the water's not going to be freezing, and then you turn it on and you wash yourself down there, and it's actually cleaner than if you had used toilet paper. The downside is you have to sit there and after you turn off the water and wait for it all to dry. So instead of toilet paper, I would recommend that you store up travel bidets. And travel bidets, I'll leave some links in the show notes. They can be bought on Amazon for, say, 10 or 12 bucks. It's not that big of a deal. It's like a little light blue plastic water container with a straw on the end, and this straw comes out and then it takes a right turn. So the idea is that you fill it up with lukewarm water and you do your business out while you're camping or whatever, and then you kind of squirt under there, and then you let yourself dry, and you're good to go. It's nice to be that clean down there. I'm among those who is, shall we say, anal about anal cleanliness. But I think we all are. You know, if there's a true societal collapse, number one, anyone who has stored up toilet paper is going to run out of it because it's not reusable. And then a lot of people are going to be walking out in the forests and the countryside, and they're going to try to use leaves. If they don't know what to look for as far as poison oak and poison ivy, and they use some of that instead of toilet paper, that could get really ugly really fast. I mean, it's bad enough just kind of brushing by something like that when you're wearing shorts and hiking, but I don't even want to think about it. So instead of storing up toilet paper, store up travel bidets. Oh, back to mice and rats. The other day, I went to a police department, not in the middle of the town, kind of in the suburbs, in the neighborhood area. Not because I was arrested or anything, but I had to get a police report for a client. And on the way out to my car, I smelled that smell, and it's very distinctive. I know what it was. And my first thought was, oh no, the police department's been invaded by mice and rats. And then I thought, no, what's that on the other side of the parking lot? And there was a fence there, and I noticed on the other side of the parking lot, there's one of these storage places. And that storage place had been invaded by mice and rats. And I knew it because of that smell. So a lot of preppers think, okay, I'm not going to bother storing this up in a shed. I'm going to store all my preps in a storage shed. And that's okay if you have stuff that's in metal, like number 10 Mountain House cans. That's okay. Or a 5-gallon bucket. That's okay. You know, that's thick enough plastic. But Mylar bags, forget it. Baggies, forget it. Toilet paper, forget it. You know, mice will get in, all that. And even if they don't, you know, if you smell that smell, that means mice have gotten in. They'll crap and piss all over the floor of your storage. It's like a garage that people rent. And not only that, a lot of people rent those storage places to park their motorboat or their RV, you know, because maybe their HOA doesn't allow them to park that in their driveway. So they've left a motorhome in this storage shed. And if the mice and rats get in there, they can rip apart the seat cushions. And in an RV, they can shred the insulation from in the walls. And then you'll open up a cabinet or a drawer where you anticipate seeing silverware. And instead, you see a little nest of mice, maybe with some baby mice there. It's really gross. And then that smell, you won't be able to get that smell out of your RV or your motorhome. It's going to be really ugly. Anyway, back to toilet paper. Don't store toilet paper. Instead, store travel bidets. And it's a good idea to get several of them. Here's another disgusting prep. Let's talk tampons. Tampons are not a good idea to stock up on. And I've noticed there's some people out there who talk about it's important to stock up on tampons. I don't think that's a good idea. I did some research. The average woman goes through 11,000 tampons in her life. And don't even be tempted to clean and reuse a tampon. There are a number of diseases you can get, including sepsis, blood infection. It's bad news to try to recycle a tampon. So those are one-time use only, and you're never going to store up 11,000 tampons. So in case of a societal collapse, it's just not a good idea to try to store up enough tampons to be of any use. You can never store up 11,000. And if you even get close, the mice and the rats will get in and they'll shred it all up and crap and piss all over it. So don't even try. I think in case of a true societal collapse, I think what women will revert to is using the rag, which is what they used before tampons came along. The way women would try to stem the flow back during their periods before tampons, they would use like a shop rag. They would roll it up tight and wedge it between their legs and try to make do with stemming the flow of the blood. And once or twice or three times during the day, they would go to the restroom and take out the old rag, try to clean it, and insert a new rag. And that's where the expression "on the rag" comes from. Now, when tampons were invented, that must have been, you know, you hear this expression, oh, that's the greatest invention since sliced bread. Well, I think the invention of tampons for women was the greatest invention since sliced bread, maybe even better than sliced bread. So here's the thing. I would recommend instead you stock up on menstrual cups. And I'm not qualified to tell you how to insert them, how to use them. I can just tell you They come in two sizes, depending on if the woman involved has had a baby or not. I've had two conversations with family members, women family members, and they were very awkward conversations, as you can probably expect. But these women were both very happy with the menstrual cup. And if you go on the Amazon reviews, you'll see what I'm talking about. Like 90% of those reviewers are very happy with the menstrual cup. And they only cost like maybe 10 to 12 bucks a piece on Amazon. I'll have some links in the show notes. These are great to stock up on. Here's another disgusting prep, skin fungus cream. Now, here's the thing. You might not think that you'll be a candidate for jock itch or athlete's foot or ringworm in your hair, but just figure you're stocking up stuff for a total societal collapse. You're not just, you know, a power outage for the weekend. I mean, if there's a total societal collapse, you know, you're not going to be able to go back and say, oh, I wish I had stored this stuff up. So what's going to happen, and by the way, this metallic sound that you hear is my tinfoil hat securely put on my head. It occurred to me a few years ago, I had a jacuzzi and then my daughter and I got in there and we were having a water fight, and then the water fight, there was armistice, and then I got out of the jacuzzi and had a swimsuit, and I got in a bathrobe, and I put my feet in my bathroom slippers, which were wet. And then I went into the house. Something was on TV. You know, the wife wanted me to watch some movie, an entertaining movie, no doubt. And then I went to bed. The next day, I woke up with some athlete's foot. And I vaguely remember getting athlete's foot back when I was in high school athletics, but this was really painful. And I remember I was about to go on an overseas trip at the time, and I just thought, I can't even walk. You know, this is awful. I'm going to have to cancel that trip. Well, I wound up getting some skin fungus cream, and after a few days, the athlete's foot abated. But that was pretty ugly. All right, now let me tell you what would happen in a total societal collapse. You'd have a whole bunch of people in the city getting hungry and getting cold and getting scared. So they're going to leave the city. And they're going to start marching, and they're not going to be prepared. They're not going to have raincoats. They're not going to have umbrellas, etc. So they're just going to keep hiking into the outskirts of town, into the countryside. They're going to get rained on. They're going to have to hike through rivers, through creeks. They're going to have horrible athlete's foot. They won't be able to bathe with soap for a long time, so they could have horrible jock itch and ringworm, and all this stuff is just skin fungus. All right, meanwhile, if you go to your neighborhood Walmart today, chances are you could get a tube of this skin fungus cream. And don't worry, if you've got jock itch and all that's available is athlete's foot cream, it doesn't matter. It's skin fungus cream. And just start stocking up on that stuff. A couple years ago, it was 88 cents on the end cap at my Walmart. Whether it's 88 cents or $2, you know, it's one of these things that in a true societal collapse, this is going to be so completely valuable. In a barter situation, if a total societal collapse happens, you show up and you say, hey, I've got some skin fungus cream, and you'll be able to name your own price. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if you could get a number 10 can of Mountain House or I don't know, I mean, a tent or something. You could probably get some stuff that is extremely valuable because people will be in extreme pain. But if real push comes to shove and it's a matter of who's going to eat and who's not, and you've got this skin fungus cream, that's going to be extremely, extremely valuable. So I would recommend that you stock up on skin fungus cream right now and keep stocking up on it and just keep stocking up on it. Store it in a cool, dry place, maybe in a 5-gallon bucket in your basement would be fine. And just know that that stuff is going to be as good as gold in a true societal collapse situation. Here's something else really disgusting and revolting. And let me just tell you, my wife and I keep a chicken coop, lots of hens, not roosters, just hens laying eggs. Anyway, one night, a couple years ago, it might have been 2 or 3 a.m., something like that, I heard a whole bunch of commotion in the chicken coop, and I heard them kind of screaming, you know, in their own chicken ways. So I knew right off it was some kind of animal that had gotten in. So I grabbed my 22 rifle and flashlight and went down there, and sure enough, there was a fox that had dug under one of the walls and had gotten in. I shined a flashlight in and killed it. And then I patched up where it had dug in. That was day one after our trash had been picked up. That was day one. And I didn't think to bury it or anything. I just put it in a trash bag, tied the trash bag tight, shut, and then just put it in the trash can. Like I said, that was day one. Day two, no problem. Day three, I started smelling some bad smells from the trash can area. And I thought, maybe I'll enter the house and exit the house from the front door, not that back door. That was day four. Then day five, it was getting really bad, really bad. And by day six, I thought, forget about the front door. I'm going out this window way over there because the smell was so bad. And remember, this was from the inside of a tied up trash bag. And then the night of day six, I wheeled it down to the road. And for some reason, don't ask me why, the trash people took it away along with the rest of the trash without any hassles. But that was among the worst smells I've ever smelled. Really bad. And you might think, why is he talking about this? Well, number one, it is disgusting. And I promised a lot of disgustingness in this podcast today. So I'm delivering on that front. But there's a chapter in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, where if you take my advice, you get a property like not only off the interstate, but off another road and then off another road. You know, so you don't want a survival retreat right off the interstate because the hungry hordes of people will come from the city and your property will be one of the places they visit when they try to get food. So you want to be like off of a side road and then off of another road and maybe off of another road. And ideally what you want, if you'll take my advice, you've got a precarious road that is the only entrance to your property. So if need be, you can blow that road. I mean, if things are really bad and you're really worried about the marauding groups of hungry city dwellers, well, then you can just blow that road. What you can do short of that is just put a bunch of logs there and then put dead animals there. Why the logs? Well, in case somebody manages to get a 4x4 pickup truck working and they just think, I'm just going to blow right on through this, the logs there will damage the underside of the truck. And whoever's driving it will probably have sense enough not to just plow right on through if they see that there are a bunch of logs there. But anybody on foot, or if the driver gets out and checks it out, they'll smell all this horrible smell. And they'll just say, you know, let's go check on some other piece of property and let's leave this property alone. So not only dead foxes, but if you ever go hunting and you kill a deer and you do the field dressing out there, hold on to those entrails and put them on that road that's an entrance to your survival retreat. Any kind of dead animals, any kind of animal guts, just put it out there. And don't just leave it out in the countryside. Bring it up and put it on that road right outside your survival retreat. And that way, you will greatly reduce the chances of people wanting to hike around that or drive through it with that disgusting smell.
It's time to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Head to Cabela's for hunting and outdoor gear. It's all field tested, field proven. You can trust our gear. Shop three ways and find everything you need. Cabela's, world's foremost outfitter.
Because we don't just expect the unexpected, we prepare for it. Because home should feel like home, no matter what. Why are Mountain House meals the premium choice for emergency food storage? Because our food tastes better and has the longest proven shelf life, period. Your family can depend on Mountain House for both food and comfort. Anytime, every time. We don't do things the easy way. We do them the right way. We do it because we're Mountain House.
I can't defend my family because I live in Chicago.
I am free to defend my family with my AR-15, my shotgun, or handgun because I live in Wyoming.
I can't even protect myself if I'm attacked because I live in D.C.
I carry my 9mm in my purse anywhere I go in Texas.
I can't protect my small retail shop here in Brooklyn.
We keep guns behind the counter at our shop in Oklahoma. Only had a show at once.
Do you see a pattern?
Pattern?
A well-regulated militia.
Being necessary.
Necessary.
Necessary to the security of a free state.
The right of the people to keep and bear arms
shall not be infringed.
Equality. The Second Amendment Foundation. For more details, go to equalgunrights.com.
You're listening to the Survival in Motion podcast with author Cal Wilson.
Okay, no talk of disgusting preps will be complete without a little talk of sewage. So here's the thing. If you do take my advice and get a survival retreat, in other words, a vacant piece of property way out in the country, women, including your wife or females you want to come out there, will be less inclined to come out there until you have a porta potty out there. Now, porta potties, what they're used to is you actually rent them. And then once a month or however long, some sewage truck will come up and suck all the sewage out of your porta potty and they'll drive away. In so doing, they'll get to know your property, which is not good for OPSEC. So what I did is I searched around and I actually bought a porta potty. I think $800 to $1,000 each. It's all plastic, you know. And then I cut out a hole in the bottom of that basin and then I hooked up an RV sewage dump pipe. And then I put the whole thing on a little trailer. So that way, what you can do is you can use it as a porta potty, and women will be more inclined to come up to your property with you, knowing that they can, you know, use the restroom in private. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's still better than nothing for women. And if you pull on that sewage release, then you can collect the sewage by another container, and that's a little bit more portable, and then you can dump that at an RV park somewhere where they take sewage dumps. Or you can dig a hole in the ground and then just dump it in there and then bury it. Make sure that that hole is nowhere near your water well. That way your water well will start tasting a little interesting there. Another thing I wanted to say, septic tanks, those can be a real problem unless you have a whole lot of this stuff called RID-X. RID-X is kind of like bacteria food. It keeps the bacteria down in your septic tank healthy, and that's what you want so that when your sewage is flushed and it's down in the septic tank, then the bacteria will, you want them to go, all right, you know? And they'll eat all the sewage. So RID-X is something that is good to have for your septic tank. All right, this is not so much a disgusting prep, but it's more like a creepy prep. Snakes. Wherever you are in the United States, there might be 5 or 6 local native snakes. And of those snakes, they're not all poisonous, but there are usually 1 or 2 types of snakes in your area that will be poisonous. And there are different types of rattlesnakes in different parts of the United States. They're all poisonous. I've heard arguments, no, you don't want to, you know, I'm sorry. If my family's there, if I bring kids there, etc., and there's a poisonous snake there, it's got to go. It's got to go. So when you're in the country, you should be careful where you walk, because occasionally you might come across a poisonous snake. or a few years ago. I don't know why, but there was a summer when we had just a ton of poisonous snakes all around. So I got to be pretty good at killing poisonous snakes. Now, here's the thing. It's a good idea to have round head shovels all around your house, everywhere. You want to have more than enough. If you have four walls on your house, have four round head shovels, one per wall, just leaning against the wall. So that way, when you're walking along and you see, whoops, here's a rattlesnake, I don't want to step on it, you can slowly back away. And rattlesnakes are deaf, so you don't have to be quiet or anything. Some people like to just shoot it with snake shot, which is fine, but I'm paranoid about ricochets, so I'd rather pull out a shovel. Now, if you have a round head shovel right nearby, you can slowly back away, grab that round head shovel. Here's how you use the round head shovel to kill a snake. You see the snake just curled up there on the sidewalk. And you take that round head shovel and just start chopping it. Just chop, 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 chop. You don't have to be precise, just keep chopping. That way the snake will be still. It's not going to be able to move. And then you can slowly and carefully and methodically use that round head of that shovel to kind of crease across the neck of that snake and slide it and cut off the head of that snake. Now, the snake head will still be trying to bite. It's a nervous thing, I guess. So either bury that snake head or put it in some kind of a glass jar and throw it away, but don't just leave it there. You can leave the body there, that's fine, but the snake head is still gonna be trying to bite. It's really gross. So anyway, just thought I'd let you know about snakes. Every once in a while, there's a chance you might come across a snake where it's not out in the open. A few years ago, I had a refrigerator out on our deck, and I moved it inside the house, and I was hooking it up the water lines, and sure enough, I happened to glance over, and maybe a foot away from my head was a rattlesnake. Make a long story short, this 47-inch stainless steel snake catcher was used. It's kind of like a metal, you can reach in and grab something. And so it's, you can use that safely. That snake was grabbed and it was pulled out of the refrigerator underneath it, brought outside to the driveway, put on the ground, and then chopped with a round head shovel. I'm going to have a link for that product, that steel snake catcher, in the show notes here. But the important thing, I think, is keep round head shovels everywhere. Every time you go to a hardware store, check the sales. Every once in a while, say October or November, hardware stores figure they're not going to be selling a lot of these, so they put them on sale. So stock up on round head shovels so that you can kill poisonous snakes around your area. Okay, another prep that I believe is disgusting enough and nausea-inducing enough to be included in this podcast today is the following subject: bad food. I think in case of a total societal collapse, we will be eating on occasion food that is not the best to eat. Like if you've been at a third world country and you've eaten food and you've gotten sick, that's kind of what we can expect in our country in case of a societal collapse. Every once in a while, we're going to be eating food that just, it's not cooked well enough, it's just not safe. And I'm reminded of that soldier from North Korea who ran across the border. Now, these soldiers from North Korea who are nearby the border, they are the ones who are best fed. And this guy was found to have several parasites in his stomach. And I think that the talking was that supposedly this came from eating food that was grown in gardens which had been fertilized by human waste. And that's why if you have a composting toilet, you know, I know that stuff will be burned to ash, but I still don't think it's a good idea to put that in a garden where you're growing stuff that you're going to eat. But that could be us. I mean, someday, if there's a total societal collapse, we could all be eating stuff that we probably should not be eating. We could get dysentery. We could get really bad diarrhea. We could get constipation. We could get parasites like tapeworm or whatever. That soldier from North Korea, he had several parasites. One was almost a foot long. Gross. And we could have various medical conditions. Salmonella, E. coli, sepsis, like I said, tapeworm. So how can we get rid of this stuff? Well, right now, before the society collapses, it's a good idea to go to Walmart or wherever you go to grocery stores and just start stocking up like I did today. I was at Walmart today and I bought some anti-diarrhea pills for 88 cents and some laxative pills also for 88 cents. These laxative pills, brown pills, fittingly. But these are both for 88 cents still at Walmart. I think this is a great thing to have. If you get diarrhea, if you have constipation, and you have this stuff stocked up, then you'll be able to handle it. Here's another thing. I keep reading about garlic being a great thing for stomach issues. And I've even read that garlic is good for urinary tract infections. So growing garlic in your garden is probably a good idea. Another thing is cayenne pepper. I had a whole chapter on cayenne pepper. That's good for a number of things, not only stomach issues. So stock up on this stuff, anti-diarrhea pills, laxative pills, and grow garlic and grow cayenne pepper. But anyway, it's a good idea to stock up on this stuff now, these pills, and to have garlic and cayenne pepper in your garden so that when you run out of these pills, you'll still be able to take care of yourself. So there you have it. In this podcast, we've discussed mice and rats and what they do to things that you store up and how they crap and piss all over everything and smell everything up. We've talked about tampons and women's periods. We talked about athlete's foot and jock itch, dead animals and how bad they smell. We've talked about sewage and septic tanks, latrines. And we've talked about those creepy crawly things called snakes. And we've talked about bad food, dysentery, diarrhea, and parasites. So I think we've covered a lot of really disgusting preps in today's podcast. And I hope you found it entertaining and informative and educational. If our talk today might have left you a little nauseous, might I suggest some Pepto-Bismol or maybe even some Pepcid or something, or maybe some Beano. Anyway, I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thank you for joining me. God bless.